everyone. I'm Jennifer Stachokas with Western Wealth Capital, and I am the Executive Managing Director.
Welcome. And just so everybody is clear, you're an owner-operator, is that correct?
Correct, we are.
And you're based out of?
So our parent company, Western Wealth Capital, is based out of Vancouver, British Columbia. But the management company, which is Western Wealth Communities, that I oversee and run, is based in Phoenix, Arizona.
Now, so this episode, I guess, is geared towards operations, but really focused on team, people, and leadership. Now, from my understanding, you have grown this company really quickly. So I imagine, and I'm guessing, that you have specific culture, certain types of people that you want that fit your team philosophy. And when I say yours, I mean the companies. Mm-hmm. It might be impacted by yours, but I mean the companies. So how do you pick people to join, to come on your bus, and to make sure that they align with your values and you have the right people?
Absolutely. So it's a great question. I think there's lots of things to talk and unpack in that. But we did at Western Wealth Communities, we grew, from zero properties to 57, I believe, we onboarded in about 2 years. So it was several hundred employees.
And how many units does that contain?
That was over 15,000 units. Yes. It was significant growth in a short amount of time. And then that was also taking place during COVID. So, building teams and interaction with teams was a little bit different during that time. As everybody knows, we were doing things over Zoom, not as much in person. But when it really comes down to hiring and attracting the right talent, there's a couple things. So first off, you have to put your money where your mouth is. So we said when we came out of the gate that we, and many companies say this, that we're a people first property management company. And if you're going to say you're people first, your actions have to actually show that you're people first. And so when I say you have to put your money where your mouth is, it meant we invested heavily in recruiting. And so one of my very first corporate hires was my director of recruiting and getting her in place, because if we knew we were going to grow and scale the way we were intending to and the way we actually did, it was going to require a lot of manpower and a lot of hiring. So, just last year, I believe we hired over 300 employees. So it's a significant amount of people that are coming through the door, applications that need to be screened, interviews held, and then carried on to hiring managers. And so a couple things too with recruiting, and then we built and grew that team, knowing that we were going to continue to grow and scale the organization. But when it comes to building teams, to me, it all comes down to building a diverse team. And I mean diverse in thought, in nationality, and in every way that you think of. You want to have a really diverse team, because the worst thing I can possibly have is have a boardroom of people sitting in there with me, agreeing with me on everything that I say. So I want people that are going to challenge and see things differently to really make the company grow and be better. And so when I look at my team at the end of last year, this is my direct reports, we utilize DISC as our assessment tool. Many tools out there, all depends on what works best for you, but my head of HR is certified and is a firm believer in DISC. And when I look at my direct reports, I literally cover the entire spectrum. And to me, that shows success, because there is going to be some healthy tension, because people are going to approach things differently and are going to see things differently. But as long as we all have the same vision and the core values in mind, we can get to the goal together. So that, I think, is critical. And then the other component is, with interviewing, we really need to be fast about our decisions, but we also need to make the right decision. And so I've always found it's been very critical to give the good, the bad, and the ugly when you're interviewing. So employees truly understand what's the good about joining the organization, what are some of the challenges that I'm going to face, and then what's the support I'm going to receive to be able to overcome those challenges.
So I guess right that you are very specific on what you're looking for. In the DISC assessment, I'm a little skeptical about it. There is a lot of value there, but are you using that for hiring, or are you just using that for development?
So we're using that for development. So kind of after the fact, after we built the team, we then are looking at our DISC and basically utilizing it as a tool on how to communicate. So all of our managers have their disk and all of our regional managers, our corporate support team. So we know how to best work and communicate with each other and have an understanding of the lens that your coworker is looking through when they're approaching a situation or a difficult conversation. So you know how to approach or direct communication to them that's going to be the most beneficial.
Yeah, I would be interested if you, and are people doing the DISC assessment every year?
Not necessarily.
No. Okay, fine. Or I guess as needed. Yeah. But as you have a huge team, and I don't know how you grew that fast. And are you still in hyper growth?
We are not. No, are on a little bit of a pause right now. But you know, where I say we just had a company meeting yesterday and we were talking about growth. And so what really defined us as an organization for the first two and a half years of being in existence was growth meant number of units and number of buildings. And from the summer of last year, you know, into some of 2023, growth looks different, but we still had tremendous growth last year. It was just in a different way. So we had a lot of challenges. Interest rates were rising. So we really had to turn back to basics and focus on operations and getting our process and policies all in alignment to make sure that we could face those challenges. So, you know, I think the message to our team is that, yeah, maybe we weren't growing in unit count or building count, but we were growing in the skills that we learned based on the challenges that we faced.
So before I interrupted my own thought process, was that you have this large team and you have a large group of folks who are taking the DISC assessment. I wonder if from the data that you have, and maybe you rank your there's some sort of scoring of everybody on your team is not equal. So you're going to have the higher performers and the lower performers, and to see if there's any correlation or something that you could get from the DISC assessment, who are the top performers? And then would you then look at using that for bringing on new talent? Because if there's a common, there are common denominators in the top talent and their DISC assessments, then how could you seek out more people like that?
I think it's a great question. So in my former life, we used a lot of pre-employment assessments and they were more personality-based. So based on skills or characteristics. And that I found that we were able to see correlation from that. Where I think the DISC is, it's really critical that I always tell people that work with me to not hire somebody just like you, right? If you have a whole team of people just like you, you're going to keep getting the same results that you would get if you were the one performing all of the work. And so it's really important to fill the voids and have that diverse team of people that look at things a different way, somebody that's more analytical in nature and somebody that's more creative and outgoing in nature. And there's a place for each of those people within the organization. You just can't have all of the same in one organization, in my opinion.
Are you making any adjustments in your on-site, how you staff your on-site teams?
So we are. So one of our big initiatives at the back half of last year and then into 2023 is what we call our enhanced services. So it's what a lot of other companies are calling centralization. So looking at those tasks that create noise on site and figuring out, can we actually bring those tasks or functions in-house in a corporate role and have them do those things, such as move-ins, move-outs, renewals, anything
collections.
Like that. Collections. A lot of those things that I like to say create noise or create distractions on site and don't allow them to focus on the customer. So bringing those items in-house so they have more time to focus on the customer and their expectations.
So you're not necessarily changing their roles. You're just trying to take off tasks that are not critical for them to do and that you can, I guess, scale or do more efficiently by having it in one place at corporate.
Yeah. So in a sense, we are taking things away, but freeing them up to spend more high value time on the customer. And we've also found that some of those tasks, we really analyzed what are the tasks and functions that there are leakage on site, right? And how could we tighten that up and move those tasks to a corporate function?
So I my belief is that, and there are folks that outside of the industry and even folks in the industry that don't believe in this, but I believe that the best managers and regional managers are going to be folks who are more generalist, that they've had the experience of starting with leasing, assistant manager, property manager. They have a big tool belt. I guess more of a generalist, but I feel that, you know, they don't have to be great at every single one, but they're good at all those, and that can make them great. So one, I guess what your thought about that. And then second, with as a large company and a growing company, is your focus on bringing talent in at what people call entry level leasing, and then the goal is to then elevate them versus bringing in people to fill those higher positions from outside your organization?
Yeah, great question. So I think, you know, the regional manager does play the role of generalist, and I don't necessarily see that changing. However, those regional managers or regional VPs should be surrounded in an organization by specialists. And so all of the corporate departments that we have are specialists in their area of expertise, and they're there to lend support and lend help to the generalists of the organization. So I think that is critical. I think we will find that we will have more specialists moving forward, like we talked about with what we call enhanced services or other people call centralization, where they can be those specialists in particular tasks or functions and allow the generalists to still focus on the customer and those things that are happening day to day on site.
Okay. And so do you put a big emphasis on bringing in talent at leasing and then developing them all the way up?
Absolutely. That is the ultimate goal. And it's really how I started in my career as well, that I came in leasing and then worked my way up through the ranks. And now I'm running a management company. So I think there is a lot of value there. And when you do that, you keep the consistency with the culture and you keep growing the culture in that trickle-down environment, right? So if you have somebody that started in leasing, really enjoyed and bought into the culture, and they continue to move up the ladder, they continue to expand and grow that culture to everybody that they bring into the organization. So I do think that that's critical.
That's so interesting. When you started in the industry and started in leasing, did you have in mind that you were going to get to where you are, or were just like, hey, let me just go with this?
Yeah. You know, when I got in the industry, I was actually going back to graduate school. And so I thought this was just a temporary stop while I got my master's degree. And as many people in our industry know, this industry sucks you in. And I became addicted, I guess. And I kept moving into different jobs and into different areas of the business that really interested me, and realized that I never wanted to leave because there were so many ways that I could be exposed to different parts of the business, be it training, marketing, revenue management, operations, HR, that if I went and I was a specialist based off of my master's degree, I may never have had that exposure.
So at what point did you realize, or did it become a goal to have a type of position that you have, being an executive vice president?
Sure. So I think it was one of those things where I worked for two of the largest landlords in the United States. And I always had this passion to have my own company or build my own management company and really make people the focus of it. Instead of having people be a number, have people really be a voice and be an active part of the organization in building it. And so when I was at my last organization and it was being sold, I had been reached out to by a recruiter about this opportunity that really sounded too good to be true. It was an owner that was looking to bring management in-house, and they wanted somebody to do that for them. And it was in Phoenix, which is where I already lived. So it kind of seemed like it was too good to be true. And it was one of those opportunities that I knew if I didn't take this chance a couple years down the road, I would kick myself and say, what if? And I just didn't want to have that conversation, and I wanted to see where it would take me.
So I'm fascinated and inspired, you know, hearing people's stories who started in leasing and, you know, 15, 20 years, whatever it might be, they're successful and a leader and a thought leader. There's a lot of folks who, wherever they are, whether it's leasing, a property manager, assistant manager, regional manager, that can't imagine being in a position like yours. So if we're trying to broaden people's imaginations and to aim bigger and dream bigger, what would your advice be to anybody at any, and maybe your advice is different if depending on their position, but to actually pursue a higher position and maybe an executive position at one point, at some point.
Absolutely. I think it's really important to network, and you know, you're an ultimate networker, right? And I think it is important, right, to become a thought leader in the industry. So know what those things are that you're passionate about and that you can become an expert on, and then raise your hand, speak on panels, go to conferences, do, you know, podcasts, post on LinkedIn as a thought leader, and allow people to see you in that light. So I think it's really important to put yourself out there. Sometimes get out of your comfort zone. And, you know, when I first started in the industry and really making a name for myself, it was because I raised my hand and started speaking at panels in the industry. And then people saw me on stage and knew that I was speaking about something that I was passionate about, or maybe I was an expert on a particular topic. And then people start coming to you more and more for advice on those things. I think another important thing too is finding a mentor or a coach that can push you and also give you really honest feedback about what you need to do to grow in your career. Something I'm very passionate about is giving back, especially to women in our industry, but certainly I've mentored quite a few men as well. But I think it's important that you yourself need to also look to somebody or many people to provide that guidance to you to move your career forward.
I find so I am pretty active on LinkedIn, and actually in a weird way, the best is not that people will see me in a certain light or I can put my thoughts out there so that people see me as something, but the exercise of being clear on what I believe and what my thoughts are, that I'm comfortable presenting it. So it's not so much, it's not as much as getting the exposure, but it's actually doing the work to be ready. Not to be exposed, but to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And that's been a huge confidence builder for me. And it forced me to like really be clear and passionate about what I believe. And when you work on something and like, what is it, do I believe about something, then you are actually going to feel a lot stronger than if it's something you're just shooting from the hip. So to close off, this is the beginning of 2023. What are you excited about in 2023? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. So enhanced services that we already talked about, certainly very passionate about that and finding ways to free up our on-site teams to focus on the customer. I'm very passionate, for many people that know me, know I'm passionate about data, but the data really needs to be actionable. Instead of people spending time manually working on the data, they need to be analyzing the data and taking action on the data. And so that's been a big focus at the back half of 2022 and into 2023, is to really leverage our business intelligence tool further. And I think the last thing I would say, just from a personal perspective, is making sure that I'm prioritizing myself. And sometimes it's really easy to get sucked into the work, and you make excuses for why you're not exercising or why you're not doing something. And so to me, this year is all about prioritizing myself, because if I'm my best self, I can give my best self to my team. And it is a positive and a win-win for everybody.
The better you feel about yourself, the better you perform.
That's right.
Well, I greatly appreciate your time. And hopefully folks are inspired that they could aim high and accomplish a lot. This is a fun industry, and like you said, if you got sucked in, you might as well aim for the top. Thank you so much.
Thank you.